You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Well, welcome to the second and final hour of the show. It is a Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are powered by SID Media. It is a Thursday, the 23rd of January 2025. 2 days just before a lot of people get paid, right? And what a way to start the show. And of course, have this beautiful conversation because it is Shapeshifter Thursday. And my guest this evening is one that I think we admire quite a bit. And I hope that, as we talk to her and unpack her life, it might just be a little bit of an encouragement for you, if at all, anything, right? If you're wondering who we're talking to, Bogupi Kuqala, number one. But anyways, we're going to forgive you for that. We're talking to Sis Thuli Khakhaza. She is our shapeshifter for today. She is, of course, a trauma counselor, keynote speaker, facilitator, 2023 Health Excellence Award finalist at the HCP, and the recipient of the AHEA 2024 Employee Wellness HCP First Runner-Up Award. And she's joining us this evening to talk to us about her life and her career as well. What a phenomenal, achievements that she has garnered over the years. Good evening, ma'am. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, Tapelo, and good evening to listeners as well.
Ah, fantastic.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you so much for gracing us. How are you doing, and are you in a good space? Hi, Sis Thuli, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Ah, fantastic. I was saying, how are you doing, and how are you in a good space?
Yes, all is good. All is good in a great space, really.
Yeah.
And I hope that it is so for you too. We're just into the...
Okay, I'm losing you there a little bit. Let's see. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you there. So you're saying you're in a good space?
Correct, yes. We've entered into 2025. I'm hoping it will be as well.
Well, we're hoping it will be, right? We're hoping it will be. Starting, of course, the year on a positive note is a great thing, and we really appreciate that. Now, as we were talking and starting there, we're talking about some of the accolades that you have garnered over the years. So before we even start, getting into the interview, how do you feel knowing, all these things kind of follow your name?
I'm sorry, I've lost you there. Please repeat that.
I was saying that before we even get into just a little bit about yourself, I'm saying that when you hear the fact that, when people mention your name, there's quite a bit behind your name, keynote speaker, counselor. There's a couple of awards that you have also garnered in the process. How does it feel to be, having all these things behind you?
It used to be a lot.
Yeah.
It used to be a lot. Now I think I've learned to embrace not just who I am, but also the diversity and the complexity with which it no longer frazzles me as much.
Okay.
So they kind of work interchangeably at this point.
Yeah.
Also, it's not just one or the other.
Yeah.
They usually work together. So when speaking, one may often be facilitated.
Yes.
So I'm able to infuse the two there.
Mm.
And with counseling comes the developmental aspect. So
yes.
My approach to counseling is inclusive of coaching.
Ah, okay.
So it depends on what the client needs to address on the day.
Yeah. Did you always find it easy to use them interchangeably, or it's something that over time you've had to actually embrace?
Uh, I can you hear me?
Yes, I can
you
hear you.
You disconnected slightly.
I can hear you. Did you hear my question?
No, I did not know how to use them interchangeably before. I was very much clinical, the basics of social work.
Yeah.
You know, a person with a problem goes to a place, needing a solution, etc. But over time, I myself underwent coaching at some point, encouraged by a manager I had in one of these many, many occupational roles I've had.
Yes.
And through that experience, the following year or two, I underwent coaching as a developmental aspect for leadership.
Yeah.
And it is that experience that I then started molding that content into my support for clients. And this is why I no longer just speak of myself as a social worker, but as a wellness and development consultant, because I hold my client space for those two purposes. When you are mentally and emotionally well, you will thereafter have capacity to develop and expand yourself, how you navigate your day to day challenges.
Ah, that's amazing. Oh, really, really amazing that bit as well. Okay, let's go back then, Sis Thuli. Where were you born, and a little bit about where you were born?
I was born in a very small town. Now living in a very, very big town.
Yes. Yeah.
I was born in a small town called King Williamstown in the Eastern Cape, known as Ekone.
Yeah.
Shout out to
Ekone. Exactly. Representing, right?
And it really shaped me. It shaped me a lot. That's where I was born and raised. This was in 92, August on the 21st.
Yeah.
Take note, guys, you guys can buy me a
advance. No doubt.
But yeah, I went to a Model C school.
Okay.
I lost you there a bit. Are you with me?
I'm with you. So you were saying that you went to a Model C school, which is really nice.
Yes, that was for my primary through to high school. Prior to that, I went to your local creche, literally local.
Yeah.
Creche like three streets down from where you stay, kind
okay.
of local.
Yeah.
but I've just always been exposed to which is what has shaped and molded my voice and my tone.
Yeah.
And speech.
Yeah.
So it took me a while to also recognize it was different. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I really didn't know.
Yeah.
Until
yeah.
people pointed it out.
Yes.
I really didn't know. Because you grow around the same people who've gone to the same place.
Yes.
As you've bounced around schools.
Yes.
But yeah. So yes, thanks to my mom for that.
Yeah, shout out.
It was a bit tough growing up.
Yeah.
You know, we were part of the coconut era.
Okay. That's nice.
But of course, learned not to bully others and label people for the diversity of their educational experiences.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah.
Okay, that's lovely. Now, I want to just sit on the Ekone itself, right? Or King Williamstown, as maybe might be famously known. What were some of the socio-economic challenges that you can remember, at least from growing up at the time? Poverty and all those sort of stuff. Were those things that you could see in the community?
Yes, I could. I didn't grow up necessarily on the brunt end of, if you put it in a sense.
Okay.
That was of my prior siblings' experience. I'm the last born of four.
Okay. Okay.
So by the time I came into the picture, my mom had clearly had quite a three different children experience.
Yes. Yeah.
What she wanted for all of us. And with each one, she did her best to try and do better.
Yeah.
So for me, when I was born, apparently 6 months after, they had relocated from Ginsburg to live in a West Bank, which is where I was raised. So I was so I was raised in it was raised in a semi-modern environment. It wasn't
okay.
Bryanston or Sandton.
Yeah.
But it covered necessities.
Yeah.
It was definitely not a gated community.
Yeah.
All you had was the yard, the home. But I grew up in a very big community.
Okay.
All the parents knew everybody's kid, and
yes.
everybody's kid knew the parents.
Yeah.
And it was like a good 2-3 kilometer radius of community that knew everyone.
Yeah.
So when there was any family events, there was always support around you.
Mm.
And that's cool, Jim. Hey?
Yeah.
It didn't matter. That elder was your parent.
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
That's kind of the space I grew up under.
Ah, that's quite interesting. And so would you then agree? And I know the name calling, you said, we should stay away from it. But would you say you grew up at least privileged to some extent?
I would say, seen, especially through high school and tertiary,
mm.
I would say I was privileged.
Mm.
It may not have been, get everything you want,
yes.
at any time you want it,
yeah.
but one thing I can see and I am very grateful for
yeah.
is the investment. So because she's a teacher, she knew what she was doing. So
yes.
yeah, I definitely believe I had a great privilege of being pushed not only by, your parent at home, but
yeah.
also the educators who were very devoted and invested in ensuring
yes.
that, you become a better version of yourself. But
yeah.
also, Shem, yes, I was an A student, guys.
Oh, okay. Look at you.
I was not an A student.
Yeah.
I was probably like B's and C's, possibly even D's. I don't know.
yeah.
but
yeah.
In tertiary, life changed. I found my voice in
you
my
found
mind.
Your
and with
voice.
And so things really escalated in tertiary. But I went to the rural university, what is, inverted commas, called the rural university,
yeah.
University of Forte.
Yeah.
Alice.
Alice.
And I loved it. I think as much as I was raised where I was raised, my mother always taught us never to be prideful or
yeah.
look down on people. So my socialization was predominantly with people from Elokshini, Ekasi,
yes.
and in the rural areas. That was
yes.
my preference because I didn't see the difference as,
yeah.
as I'd indicated earlier.
Yeah.
And I also just, and then, when I knew I had an interest in psychology, I was also curious of
yeah.
what separates the two.
Yeah.
And I started to see it, I think, especially in tertiary, as you learn more.
Yeah,
you can then begin to see, oh, okay, socialization to this may often lead to an outcome like this, etc.
That's quite interesting. And tell me then, your primary school, or what we call primary school here in South Africa, right? Your primary school, what are some of your fond memories that you can think of, and maybe even one or two things that stand out about your primary years?
I got a lot of certificates for being kind and caring.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'd go into the business of being kind and caring.
Look at that.
I got a lot of certificates for being kind and caring.
Sure.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. You're saying you got certificates for being kind
Tabelo?
And caring. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Hello?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Tabelo?
Sis Tuli, I can hear you. Can you hear me? Okay, so it seems like she can't hear me. Let me do this. Let me try again. And I'm just going to give her a call as well. She was telling us a little bit about the fact that she got many certificates for being kind and caring, which is really interesting if you come to think about it, right? Who gets a certificate for being kind and caring? So, Sis Tuli, you got a certificate for being kind and caring. What type of a certificate?
Apparently, that would be me.
What type of a certificate is that?
I was helpful before I knew how much helpfulness I would be in the world.
Batung. So this thing was always in you, right? So this thing was always in you. I mean, getting certificates for being kind and caring. Sister Lee? Can you hear me?
I'm sorry, please repeat that.
I was saying that, not a lot of people get certificates for being kind and caring. So clearly, that's an interesting award.
Yes, I can. You can proceed.
Yes. So I was saying that, being kind and caring.
Mundane thing.
Can you hear me?
I think we're having some feedback. Can you hear me?
I can hear you clearly. Can you hear me? Okay, so this network is really giving us issues once again. So let me see if I can get her on a different line. All right, so we've got Osis Tuli back on the line. And like I said, I'm really interested in this award of being kind. Is that what it wrote on that paper?
Yes. It was written kind and caring.
Sure.
I had quite a number of them. It would be a separate one for being helpful and another one for them. And
okay. Can you hear me once again?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, it's.
Are you able to hear me?
I can hear you now. All right, let's maybe proceed from here, and maybe let's get into then all these experiences at school, the accolades, the kind and caring awards, and all those sort of stuff. They seem to have been things that maybe shaped you and made you who you are today. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. You know, serving other people and being exposed to other people's adversity and challenges is not easy. And I'll never forget my first social worker in practice where we needed to do a child placement and removal.
Yeah.
And sitting on the courts, and the magistrate actually on the last day of my visitation at the court and the last week of my practice actually, she had indicated that, you know what, she's very happy with, you know, she believes I've chosen the right profession for myself and the diligence with which she's been told I'd apply myself to making sure things are done well. And really didn't pick for me all those years ago.
Yeah.
I've had quite a number of shapeshifters throughout high school, primary and high school, and even in tertiary.
Yeah.
Who'd said and spoken all these things unto me. And I can safely and strongly say I didn't know myself then. I would lie. I was just determined to serve other people.
To serve other people.
But it didn't quite click for me. But it was clearly clicking for everybody else.
Yes.
And so it only kind of registered for me a good decade, about a decade ago.
Ooh.
But I started learning how to make use of my own voice through tertiary.
Yeah.
Where I was, you know, the first female chair for social work students. And the following year I was recruited by SASCO. Yes. Politics matter, guys.
Mm-hmm.
You must understand what's happening in your society and community in order to know how best to support them, you know, with the primary interest of also informed support goes a long way as opposed to pushing our own agendas of what should be right.
Yes.
And then later, because I was starting to really get good at politics, and that's something, I was too good. That could be a weapon, and I didn't want to be weaponized or become a weapon formed against myself and others.
Yeah, that's true.
And I just ventured more to the profession.
Yeah.
From there, And yeah, then slowly as I matured, I did a couple of, it wasn't easy getting a social work job, I won't lie.
Sure.
After I graduated 2015.
Yeah.
But I was determined to not allow my mother's efforts that she would have poured into me to have enabled me to be who I am, where I am, to go to waste. So I was like, I cannot have spent a 4 years. I failed my major, guys. Let me also mention that. Hey, failure is part of your journey. It can be working for your good. The Lord makes it all work for your good. As a result, I came out with two majors because I had an additional 6 months instead of the full 4 years. So I came out with the majors of psychology and criminology, which I'm very grateful for. So I didn't study 4.5 years to not be employable was my narrative.
Yes.
And so I started, I'd volunteer for years. I volunteered for a couple of years in some spaces. I did a bit of admin work here. I did some PR and events work there.
Yeah.
I did some project management. I did administration. I did research. I was juggling jobs in another life. So I did quite a number of things, but none of those were fulfilling. And none of those were satisfying.
Yeah.
I mean, with all those incomes, I was making an equivalent of a 15K plus salary. But it was not satisfactory.
Yeah.
Like in your early, like 2020 as well. And it just wasn't satisfying. I was like, you know what? I'm juggling these jobs so that I can afford to go into the community. So I started looking around. I then had relocated to North Street. Down 2016 to 2020. And while there, I jumped to 2016, 17, 18. And then I started, you know, positioning myself to go back into doing developmental programs in schools. So I'd look at what's the problem, what does the problem manifest as, and then how can I help? I loved working with the very rebellious youth. Because I found in my practice experience that it's usually signs of neglect. And a lack of support. I started cultivating that kind of work and I got myself employed. And I ran a private practice. Basically, I was consulting for that school 2017, 18, 19, 20. And then 2020, COVID happened, which shut down my business, which sucked, I won't lie.
I
grieved, I cried. It was a horror movie. But by June, I was included in a tertiary institution. And I've been with them for what will be 5 years in June now. But I still now have gradually started getting back into private consulting. And interestingly, that's now gotten me the award. That you read when you started.
That's quite interesting. Now I want to go back to, I suppose, the psychology and criminology bit of it, right? Because that's quite interesting there. Is it something that you always wanted to get into, or you think it was by God's grace that you got in there? Because, I mean, how many people really go to study about criminology, for example?
It's very helpful. It's very insightful. So the manner in which the course for social work is shaped is that you cannot go into a society without understanding its dynamics. So our electives included sociology, psychology, and criminology. And then the social work had its you know, advancements as you matured through the years, which included legal frameworks, administration, community engagement. We were thrown into communities off a bus, and you must figure out how to go connect with that society. You had one class that would teach you. When you go in, some places have chieftaincies, some places don't. You must find who are the leaders in the community to be able to be granted permission to proceed, et cetera, et cetera. But we were literally thrown up like, pick a side and get off. You and your five friends in class and go figure it out. So we were groomed proper, like very thorough stuff. And to date, we know this is useful because you Australians and New Zealand and the UK are always recruiting social workers abroad to date. So our education system in South Africa, when it comes to the social work practice, is stellar, top tier.
Right? That's quite interesting. Now, I just want to sit here a little bit on this criminology bit because I really don't know it and I don't want to lie to you. But are we studying how criminals think, or what's the study about here in criminology, particularly from a social work context?
So criminology is the study of the criminals and the victims and the law.
Hey, yeah, yeah. It sounds like a so complicated thing right there.
So the reason this is important to a social worker, right?
Yeah.
It's social work in society.
Mm.
The reason this is valuable is we need to, and sociology starts to break down the different dynamics and the groupings that we have in society, which we don't like. Maybe we don't like to be labeled in this group and that and that.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, we were studying from whatever was formed in the 1980s at the time.
Yes.
But sociology starts to break down how people break away and feel displaced in society.
Sure.
Because of things I've experienced. Then then criminology starts to speak then how then those breakaways ultimately sometimes lead to the beginning of criminal behavior.
Mm.
And how sometimes crimes are actually by opportunity and not always intent.
Mm.
Where because I had the opportunity of seeing you walk down the street on your own, I decided I'd steal from you or violate you.
Yo.
Crime of opportunity.
Yo.
But then psychology then starts to break down to how the different minds work.
Yeah.
So it's also not everyone who walks around and sees a woman or a man on their own and decides to want to harm them.
Yes.
Then that goes to the cognitive processing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yo. So
also criminality speaks to how it's not always with why you behave the way you do, but it's more a socialization or a chemical imbalance in the mind. Around the neurodevelopment pathways, where some of us, when it comes to the prefrontal cortex, which helps you think and reason, some of us don't think and reason as often, and it's more about me, and I. And so there's a false sense of entitlement.
Yeah.
That sometimes they'll possess that leads them to think that they can do whatever to whoever. And so criminology just paints that picture of also understanding the complexities, pardon me for the background noise. Criminology then breaks down a bit around you need to understand the victim in order to support him or her.
Mm.
And you also need to understand the criminal in order to support him or her.
Mm.
Because the belief is also that they can be restorative justice.
Mm.
The frameworks as far as laws, also their rights and responsibilities.
Mm.
And also what they're accountable for and how to work with them towards that. So that's where social work, probation work.
Now, I'm going to ask you a personal question, and it's fine.
Depending on what your electives are, you're exposed to or not.
Yes, yes. So I was saying that I'm going to ask you a very personal question, but it's fine if you don't answer it, because I'm trying to get to a thorough understanding of this thing. So have you dealt with criminals and had face-to-face encounters with them?
No.
Okay. No.
Have I been exposed to nearby during that? Yes.
Yeah.
My honest research was on, gosh, I recently put a mind on Facebook about that thing.
Yeah.
It was the study of families left behind of those that are incarcerated.
So
because we were student social workers, they were not, it was in a small town, a small rural town.
Mm.
They were very touchy-feely about allowing us to go into the prison because we're students. But yeah, that could help. So instead, through the criminal justice system, and we were able to speak to the probationary workers and you know, police, you know, law enforcement professionals around it. And our interest was, what happens then to those families of the people who go into prison? How do they feel? Do they carry feelings of guilt and shame? This is also why I can say it's not always the family's fault at all times. Most times, I won't lie, it is. Most times it is, but it's not always the case. Sometimes the behavior shocks the family as well.
Yeah.
You know, this is not how we raised so and so to be, and somehow they went off on their own. And this and sociology then kick in.
Sure. And do you sometimes have sleepless nights when you think about some of the cases that you've dealt with in your career? Some clearly might have been very gruesome from, you know, looking at them and having to deal with them. And how have you dealt with that from a personal, I suppose, mental health point of view?
No.
don't have sleepless nights about them. I think, though, starting off was quite overwhelming.
Yeah.
And you see, because I did practice and volunteered for years at child welfare.
Yeah.
So I used to believe I'd work with the United Nations at some point in child protection and work from the law.
Yeah.
And that experience taught me is that there's a lot that goes into raising a child.
Mm.
And there's a lot that goes into making it.
Hmm.
And there's a lot of lack of self awareness and self understanding that leads us to be driven by our bodily urges and necessities, and not so much the longevity process of this effect in the long run.
Hmm.
Whether it's your family, you know, for the ones who end up taking care of your child because you're not employed, or it's your child themselves as priorities. I was exposed to communities where children were a big money for parents. Mothers, I experienced, we often speak a lot about absent fathers. We need to start talking about how horrible mothers can be too. And this is not to shame mothers, but rather let's have a conversation of how the mother wound is a real thing and it is a terrible thing.
Sure.
It hits 10 times worse. Also goes a long way. So I've witnessed mothers who'd abandon their children for children living in life, taken care of by the community. The mother, and you know, the father sometimes has to come in. Sometimes the father is the mother's family also doesn't want to intervene anymore because their daughter is ungrateful about their support. The community does it themselves. And children left to lead homes on their own. And one of the unique things I brought into that community at the time with the support of my seniors, my senior social workers, you know, that I was under and supported by, is let's have conversations. Let's do developmental workshops. Let's put this food there because also poverty is a thing.
It's a thing.
Poverty is the reason that people seek other forms of entertainment, which leads to childbearing in that context.
Did you?
So now I've entertained myself and there's this human. What must I do? Because this was not the plan.
Yes.
I didn't expect this.
Yeah.
And we underestimate and we assume people understand what are the outcomes of that. Common sense is not common, guys.
Mm.
And most social knowledge that we have, not everyone has that knowledge. So it's not always assumed when we go in Pagatin Utaband Bayas. I mean, we even see it sometimes in the church when we talk about certain things. People don't know. So we had to do a lot of let's educate and start from the ground. And then because I had political affiliations years prior, right, in student governance, I got them on board to support in terms of resources at the time so that we could be able to cater while we educated and we'd run these developmental workshops. They were grateful to now learn how to better take care of children, what to do, how to support, and not only just doing, also their family members and their loved ones to that behavior, but also not to enable. It was tough, man. I loved it. I love my work in child welfare. It's a great organization. They're very devoted and dedicated to serving young people. I did volunteering in Eastern Cape and again in Mpumalanga, and it's still the same thing.
It's done well. Yeah. Did I hear you properly? You're saying that there's people who leave their kids for umjolo.
Yes, you heard me correct.
Particularly mothers leaving their kids because of a man somewhere.
Yes.
How does that even start?
Mom. Because I'm referring to mothers. Men do it too. With men, we know.
Yes.
With women, it's seldom spoken of. But yes, women will leave their children. They'll have many children, and these children will be a distraction to the relationship I'm in, so leave them behind.
Yeah.
ukuthi badlani benzani angindaba, and you don't even give your family ama, you know, their SASSA details,
yes,
for them to be able to get what they need to help,
yes,
support them.
Yes.
So you keep that information to yourself. And those,
sure,
are things that, you know, quite a number of counselors can get exposed to.
Yeah, that's really,
in
really
that field.
Scary. That's really,
so
really scary.
So child protection and care is very deep.
Yeah, no,
it certainly is.
Now, you mentioned something about having tried different types of careers, admin, for example, and volunteering here and there. And you mentioned something around the fact that you were not fulfilled. Can you expand a little bit on that? Why were you not fulfilled? I suppose that led to then your developmental work.
Tapelo?
I can hear you. Can you hear me? This is Truly.
Hello?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Yes.
You were saying, why was I not fulfilled?
Yeah,
yes, I
was asking why do you think made you unfulfilled in the careers that you had worked at admin, for example? I think you mentioned something around admin as well. Why do you think you were not fulfilled in those areas, leading, of course, to then your developmental work?
You know, it's one of those things where I was like, if I fail or I'm not comfortable in this profession, what else would I try? And the Lord made it such that I tried everything to try before I got to the main.
Yes.
So I have nowhere else to go but be where I am.
Yes.
Because I've already explored. I've been Dora and the Explorer. And,
yeah,
and I've seen it doesn't work as well for,
yeah,
me for long term.
Yeah.
It was because as much as I did what I was doing, it was mainly money.
Okay.
And not a for over the 4 years of your qualification, you do community work for about 2.5 to 3 of those years.
Yes.
So the time to drop out is somewhere between second, third, fourth. Like, you have a chance.
Yes.
There's multiple chances to start,
yeah,
changing career.
Yeah.
But I was invested. I was in it. And
yeah,
I believe work on the value of what we do as social workers.
Yes.
And I was proud. I still am. I'm a proud,
yeah,
social worker.
Yeah.
I'm also a proud anomaly,
yeah,
in the social work fraternity.
Yeah.
I have had the humbling experience and privilege of speaking in rooms where social workers are, who are in their time, who are our profession is overlooked, no one values what we do, we're seen as people who remove children from their families.
Yes.
And speaking to those women, you know, around it was around employee wellness and,
yeah,
self reinvestment.
Yeah.
I had the oh mama and abo makazi, basically,
yes,
I was looked up to,
yeah,
come to me and say thank you so much.
Sure.
I had actually been losing faith in myself as a social worker.
Yes.
So I am a very determined and intentional anomaly in the fraternity that,
yeah,
the social work roles are so diverse, Tabelo. They are,
yeah,
so diverse. And,
yeah,
we need to expand our knowledge and insight as,
yeah,
healthcare professionals around that.
Yeah.
Because that's what makes us unique in society. So having tapped into all these spaces, one thing but it was more than that for me.
Yeah.
Everywhere I went, I was positively impacting lives, whether,
yeah,
you're my manager or my colleague. I was still being a social worker doing BI in events.
Sure.
I was still being a social worker being an executive assistant at a business lounge.
Yes.
I was still being a social worker when I was doing in a factory,
yes,
you know, questionnaire research,
yes,
research. So, and it's, so this thing kept shining through no matter where I went.
Yes.
Would be a common question. What did you study? Why are you here? You don't belong here. You should be elsewhere.
Yeah.
And eventually I followed through.
Yeah.
So my social work voice was very loud.
Yeah, it's always been there.
And yeah, I remember I was artist managing, and this guy, he's still a great friend of mine and mentor in Swaziland, who met me manage. He was
he was like, you know what, you're so well spoken and you know a lot legally and everything. Like, what's your story again? Like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, yeah.
Feel like you should be doing other things. What's your real profession?
Yes.
And when I broke it down to him, he was like, okay, so in a year, you shouldn't be doing this anymore.
Yeah.
So when you're ready to go back into whatever you want to do, reach out to me and I'll do my best to support you.
Oh, my.
Because I understand you're probably doing this for money. I get it. But you don't belong here.
Yeah.
And true to his word, he stood by me. It's been quite a gruesome process building, you know, and being this Thuli that you spoke about with all these accolades. It has been a very gruesome process.
Mm.
Support hasn't always been there.
Especially
when you'd expect it the most.
Yeah.
So it's those kind of, you know, support and the things that you hear around you and that you allow are very significant. And I had a series of mentors in diverse spaces, and I'm very grateful to them because they spoke life back into me, even in the times where I couldn't speak life to myself.
That's amazing. That's really amazing. Okay.
Yeah.
So the
passion was loud.
Yes.
The calling
yes, yes. And it's still loud even right now, right? I think it's a case of you can run away from whatever, but it will always find you. And I think that's what it is in this particular case. And that's an amazing one.
Yes.
Let's talk about money then.
I really tried to run. It didn't work.
It didn't work, right? Reminds me of that Bible story. I know you can't. It didn't work, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about money then, right? It's my favorite topic, by the way, of all topics. That's my favorite topic there. Let's talk about money. What's your relationship with money? How would you define it?
It used to be bad. I can actually boldly say it good. Yes.
That's really good. Okay.
It didn't start. It wasn't always good.
Yeah.
I want to encourage to your listeners, especially the parents, have conversations around money.
Yes.
Teach your children about the value and the significance of money, where money goes.
Yes.
Because, you know, I grew up in, like we said, to a certain degree, a privileged community, but I didn't always get what I wanted. More often than not, I never got what I wanted. Never. But I always got what I needed.
Yeah.
But as a child, that doesn't make sense. You understand?
Yeah.
I mean, it's your job to feed me. It's your job to clothe me. What do you mean?
What do you mean? Yeah.
I want a Barbie doll.
Yes. Please get me one.
I have Barbies, you know? So growing up, it wasn't always a thing. And as a result, my juggling and not lack my desire to always work at some point. I was what we call a work addict. Workaholic.
Yes.
I used to be a workaholic.
Yes.
And the reason for that again was because if you stay in work, you're able to generate something.
Yeah.
And if you generate something, then you don't need to ask anywhere else.
Yeah.
You don't need to ask anywhere else, then you're at peace mentally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then life happens in between and you have to ask and you need support and you need to just better manage your finances because juggling all those jobs, I can say to you now that I was making about 15K, but honestly at the time it felt like I was doing nothing.
Yeah.
I just had a job that would cover my rent.
Yeah.
This job would cover food. This job would cover for savings.
Yeah.
For being able to travel home. I mean, Mpumalanga to Nelspruit, I mean, Mpumalanga to Eastern Cape was a lot.
Yeah.
So that's what I did with that. But I never saw the money. I didn't know about saving and saving well, what that looked like.
Yes.
And I just barely take care of me. And because I'm a giver, again, even as that's the campaign is important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm a giver, I gave more and therefore never saw what I could have saved.
Huh.
And so I overextended myself to people, you know, got used by friends. I had a friend when she met me later was like, I wish I was your friend back then because clearly you are more reiki.
Yeah, we are now born. We are now bulang di pes.
Yazini, bruh, I paid a girl's rent once. Imagine.
Sure.
Man, I done full tanks in another life.
Yeah.
Like, man, my relationship with body was just, I had it, but I couldn't see it. And so I can't say I was wasteful. I didn't know, but I was wasteful.
Yeah.
And so when I did start having it, I started then, I think running a business helped me a lot because you needed to know what you were bringing in, what cover your overheads, what are your overheads, what are the expenses, what can you work with?
Yeah.
Because I went from, you know, this young professional developing and I plummeted at some point and I had nowhere to stay, so I was staying on site and that was going through that was the darkest days of my life ever. But it was necessary. It was humbling. There was no greater connection God and I had than in that little corner room I was in. Humbling beginnings.
That's amazing.
And it taught me a lot, man. So I knew then, I started to strategize. I knew what I wanted money for. And it wasn't just about having money. It was about what would this money get me? It's a means to an end. I remember sociology classes, right?
Yes.
It's a means to an end.
Yes.
And so I started then strategizing and channeling myself towards, okay, how much would it cost to do this? How much does it cost to do that?
Yeah.
And a lot of, I still do a lot of the research now
in
terms of finances, how to manage them. But also primarily I did the work around what is your relationship with money?
Yes.
So like I said, I grew up not having everything I wanted.
Yes.
But my needs were being met.
Your needs were met.
As a child, that means nothing because I never got to go out to most things that I would have wanted to enjoy. You couldn't afford to go out with friends because you'll be the one who always needs them to support you. You couldn't really do much outings and all these other things because remember, I'm in this Model C school and in this semi-modern home, but the economics of the home are not that. I look like them, I'm among them, but my socioeconomic home is not like that.
It's not like that.
So there was those kind of disparities and you grow up learning to make peace. So I never wanted to do most things. It's something I've worked on. It's something I've had to self-teach.
Yeah.
And it's something I continue to self-teach. And so things are a lot better now because when you hang on to the lack, that's where you get stuck.
Yeah.
But if you embrace that, sometimes you have, and when you have, you allow room for flow.
Yes.
Something called the flow.
Yes.
So I allow money to flow through me. I believe in giving. I'm very passionate about community and serving people.
Yeah.
So I believe in the giving, and I do also now recognize, though, you cannot give from what you do not have. So start with you.
Start with you, right?
Start with you.
I love that.
Because then you are in a better off space. From your surplus, you can start to share.
Yes, yes, yes. Lovely. All right. We've run out of time. And so I just want to ask then this one question. If you were to look back and advise Usis Thuli, who is younger, who is 6 years, 7 years, looking back with the benefit of hindsight, what would be your advice to the younger Usis Thuli?
Okay, please repeat that. Sorry, you got disconnected a bit.
So I was saying that if you had to advise the young Usis Thuli with the benefit of hindsight, what would you say to her as advice now that you are where you are today and looking back?
I'm sorry, Tapela, I'm losing you there.
Okay, can you hear me now? Am I audible?
Yes, very clear now. Yes.
So I was saying that what would be your advice to the younger Usis Thuli growing up in the, you know, back in the days and here you are at this age, experienced whatever you've experienced. What advice would you give to your younger self? Usis Thuli, can you hear me? Okay, I'm losing Usis Thuli. Okay, I lost Usis Thuli there. Let me try and bring her back onto this conversation. Let's see there. Let's see if she can hear me and we can continue from here. Am I clear now? Can you hear me? Hi, Usis Thuli. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So I was saying that my last question is, if you were to advise the younger sis Thuli, what would you say to her? What would be your advice with the benefit of hindsight?
You need to know yourself. I genuinely believe I would be far further off in life right now.
Yeah.
If I had fully accepted and embraced myself earlier.
Yes.
But I am also recognizing that with the knowing what I know now, I am seeing that shift happening right away. So it's perfect timing, I guess.
It's perfect timing.
Regardless, but I definitely believe in is as a campaign, guys. Please know yourself. Know the things that make you who you are. And trying to run away from your past is not a way of healing. It's a form of avoidance. You need to sit with it. And sometimes sitting with it doesn't always require or need for you to sit with those people and have them apologize to you for what they did or what they said or how they treated you. But it is about acknowledging that that happened and identifying in what ways that has shaped you and whether the manner in which it's shaped you is still working for you if you need to reframe and rephrase that and become your own authentic self. So know yourself. And acceptance is very important. Acceptance of who you are, acceptance that you're not everyone's cup of tea, acceptance that you can learn from
Okay, we've lost Sis Thuli again. Sis Thuli, can you hear me? Sis Thuli, can you hear me? Okay, we've lost to Sis Thuli once again there. Seems like these network issues giving us a problem once again. I'm not sure why it's happening, but it's something that I think we'll have to deal. But you're saying know yourself there. That would be what you were to say to your younger self, and just to accept. Acceptance is really important. Sis Thuli. Sis Thuli, can you hear me? Okay, we've lost to Sis Thuli there. I think what we'll do is we'll just leave it here. Clearly with the issues around the network there, we'll have to just see if we can get to Sis Thuli for a part two one of these days. But that's how we're going to come to the end of it. Thank you so much, Sis Thuli, for joining us. I think that conversation has been a really interesting one, and we've taken nuggets for ourselves.
Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.